welcome to the Richard Hunter interview. As ever, this is the place where I'll be discussing matters of interest with a whole range of investment experts. In this episode, I'm pleased to be joined by Marcus Fairmudge, fund manager of the TR Property Investment Trust. Marcus has been managing the TR Property Investment Trust since 2011 and is a partner at Thames River Capital, now part of BMO Global Asset Management. Along with managing the TR Property Investment Trust, he's a co-manager of the BMO Property Growth and Income Fund, which he launched in 2005, and BMO Global Real Estate Securities Fund. Previously, he was a fund manager at Henderson Global Investors from 1997 to 2004. Prior to joining Henderson, Marcus was an associate partner at Knight Frank. He's a chartered surveyor and holds a BSc in Land Management from Reading University. So thanks, first of all, very much for joining us, Marcus, and for sparing us some of your time. So if we could start from the top, could you talk us through the strategy and indeed the objectives for the trust?
Yes, indeed, Richard. So TR Property Investment Trust is a specialist investment trust investing in pan-European real estate equities and also, to a smaller extent, UK physical commercial property as well. The benchmark that the board set me to beat is the FTSE EPRA Nareit Developed Europe Real Estate Index. So that's a very long sentence, but quite simply, it's a basket of around 85 companies, 90 companies in total across Europe, covering both commercial and residential sectors. Not house builders, but there are owners of large, effectively buy-to-let blocks, but we'll come on to that a bit later, I'm sure. The second part of the strategy is to pay a progressive dividend wherever possible. I'm very pleased to have had a progressive dividend that's had a 9% compound annualized growth rate over the last decade.
Okay, you mentioned there that you actually invest in physical property.
Yes, the strategy for our physical property is really up to about 15% of our total assets. And we focus on two distinct parts of the market. The first is taking advantage of our closed-ended nature of the trust, the permanent capital, which is to buy very long-term regeneration opportunities. We have two currently. One is the Colonnades in Bayswater. It's a mixed scheme where we've just opened a couple of years ago a new 40,000 square foot Waitrose supermarket. It wasn't there before. A bunch of shops below that. We actually owned it at the first floor level. And it has a lot of flats above, most of which are sold off, but where we've been able to improve and make sales there as well. The other very long-term site is at Ferrier Street in Wandsworth. So this is last mile urban logistics. We think it's the second closest industrial estate to Hyde Park Corner. And we've just very recently let a unit to Sweaty Betty, the female athleisure wear retailer, at a record rent, which equates to about £27 per foot. Bear in mind that I bought this estate 20 years ago and the rents were £6 to £7. That shows you the amount of rental growth we've had. The other strand to our physical portfolio is to buy particular subsectors where we feel that the equity market is either looking too expensive or where we're struggling to get exposure to that particular asset class. So we own industrial and urban logistics, although we've recently just sold our urban logistics unit at the junction of the M4 and the M5. And at the moment, we are looking quite keenly at a number of retail warehousing opportunities, which is particularly those at the more affordable end, where rents are sort of £10 to £15 per foot, not the much higher end of the market. Those type of assets are very hard to come by in a listed context.
And presumably the fact that you limit them to the total amount of the portfolio will assuage any liquidity concerns that we've seen in other property funds rather than trusts.
Yes, just on that point, we think that TR Property Investment Trust as a closed-ended vehicle is a really a really great place to get exposure to real estate and real estate equities, because there is no liquidity concerns. It's not as I'm going to be suddenly a forced seller. To be quite honest, we actually, the sister fund that I run, Property Growth and Income, I launched in 2005, explicitly stating that real estate, open-ended and daily dealing shouldn't all be in the same sentence. Felt strongly that investors aren't served well by these structures that are prone to being gated or having to have very large cash positions. Now, in fact, TR Property Investment Trust is actually geared, and we're able to take advantage of what has been, you know, post the nadir of the market in towards the end of March last year, a recovering environment, and particularly post November with the vaccine. So, you know, we are able to utilize our the opportunity to have gearing in the trust, safe in the knowledge that we are, you know, this isn't an open-ended vehicle. People aren't going to come and ask for their money back. And I think in the medium term, we will see investors really move away from those open-ended daily dealing structures that really are failing everybody. And they will either buy into something like TR Property or something like Property Growth and Income, which is our hybrid, which is a more of a 60-40 or 70-30 equities physical.
Understood. So just to put a bit of colour on the trust, what are the sort of geographical and inverted commas sector allocations of the trust?
Yeah, that's a good, Richard, great question. So we are very pan-European and are effectively that split roughly 30% UK, 70% continental Europe. However, within that, it's what is sort of almost more important than the geography is actually the asset classes, the subsectors that we're in. And I mentioned at the beginning about residential, but not house builders. And this is a major focus for us. So we have about 27-28% of the fund actually in residential. Now, what this is buy to let on an industrial scale. So we have a big holding. What was in the news yesterday was the merger of Vonovia and Deutsche Wohnen in Germany. So this will, when these companies come together, this will create a single business with over 500,000 flats. So this is the other end of the scale from the mum and dad, mum and pop, you know, owning a couple of buy-to-lets. And we have the same situation, a lot of exposure in Sweden as well, and a little bit in the UK. Now, why are we in particularly Germany and Sweden? It's because rents are regulated. So they units are affordable. There is a limit on the rental growth. But at the same time, the companies we're invested in are constantly driving efficiencies through the scale of their business. Plus, you know, when people move out of the flats, they refurbish them, sometimes sell them, sell on the freeholds, long leaseholds, what's called condominiumization, or alternatively, they relet them, but at open market rents. And particularly what we like is there's virtually no vacancy in these units. And if you take something like Vonovia, which is our largest position in the fund, shares are trading at 50 euros per share. If you wish to rebuild that portfolio, it would probably cost you closer to 80 euros per share. So the stocks are trading at below rebuild cost. And that's because these rents are limited to being below market. At the same time, I'm getting a healthy earnings yield of more than 4%, 4.5%, and that is itself growing ahead of indexation. And that's a really important part of our exposure. So whilst I'll tell you that beyond residential, we have 20% of the portfolio invested in industrial and logistics, we'll possibly come back to that in a moment, another 20% in offices. These office markets are all over Europe. And what we're finding in the post-pandemic world is that occupancy of or office utilization in smaller cities is very high, back to pre-COVID levels. It's really only London and Paris where people have to commute from a lot further distance, spend a lot more time squished on public transport, that people have been more reluctant to return. But when we look at at Stockholm, at Oslo, at Madrid, at Milan, these Hamburg, Berlin, very high levels of office utilization again, which is very encouraging. And then the other part of our portfolio, which is very hard for investors to access in any kind of physical only fund, is getting access to things like student accommodation, self-storage, supermarkets, healthcare. All of these are interesting parts of the market that we're exposed to. And one of the factors that's really important looking forward through the rest of 21 and into 22 is the fear of inflation. And actually what we're finding, if we look at our residential plays or supermarkets or healthcare, or to an extent self-storage, these companies have indexation through their contracts, through their underlying contracts. So we know we're going to keep up with 2-4% rental growth if indexation continues to push on upwards. So it's highly defensive, and it's one of the great things that real estate offers you. It offers you a much bigger income margin over fixed income, but more importantly, that income is also itself growing. And when we look at our industrial logistics exposure, we're all buying more kit online. It's a fact of life. We've been underweight retail property for many, many years. I think I started writing, bleating almost about the online challenge in the 2013 annual report of TR Prop. So we've been very conscious of this for a long time. And there we're just seeing natural rental growth. There's just a lack of supply, very strong tenant demand. It's just 101 economics. The only thing that can move is the price. And in fact, last week I was down at looking at Tritax big boxes, 2.3 million square foot distribution center let to Amazon. It really is an extraordinary piece of real estate on four floors. The roof is covered in PV photovoltaic cells, and is actually the largest solar panel farm in the UK, and that's on one enormous roof. So it's quite extraordinary, really. But that's the scale, and that's going to be the Amazon's sort of southeast hub of just inside the M25.
So just drilling down a little further to the top holdings or positions in your portfolio, obviously you've mentioned Tritax and also Vonovia. Give us a bit of feel and colour for some of the stocks that you might have amongst those top holdings?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because one of our largest holdings is a business that very few, if any, of your listeners will have heard of. It's a business called Argan. Spelled Argan. It's a French company. It actually has a market cap of nearly 2 billion, but it's actually 50% owned by the founding family, the Lalonde family. And they are basically France's biggest developer of big box warehouses. So they're like Tritax, but they're, in some respects, they're even smarter, because they basically buy land, find the tenants, build the units, and either hold on to them sell them. And in fact, they just outside Metz, they completed this week a 2 million square foot, so slightly smaller than the one I mentioned in Littlebrook in Dartford, for Amazon. Same thing, four stories, lots of PV on the roof, etc., etc. But they're a little known company, and the share price performance of that has been extraordinary over the last few years. So that's very much in our top 10 holding. We've mentioned German residential, we've mentioned industrial. Other names where we have large holdings, I would highlight in terms of a recovery phase, Derwent London, which is a developer of prime offices in central London. We think that particularly post-pandemic, what we're going to find is that companies really understand they need to really look after their employees. And their employees have a choice. They can actually work part of their week from home. Some of them have a separate office, etc. Others at home. Others don't and will want to come back, particularly younger employees who want to come back to the office. But they have a choice. And in the race, the grab for talent, particularly in tech and in the creative industries that are very dominant here in the West End, you know, having the best in class office space will command the highest rents. And, you know, clearly ESG criteria is absolutely crucial for our sector. And we need to be building environmentally friendly, much more energy efficient buildings. And we're going to see an acceleration of redevelopment of older properties. And Derwent London is particularly well positioned to do that. So that's a strong opportunity for us. I mentioned supermarkets, and we have two exposures. One, some of your listeners will have heard of, Supermarket Income REIT, but there's a little known one in Finland called Cibus, which was very similar, but we're also invested in. What's so interesting about the Finnish supermarket environment is it's even more of a duopoly than there is in the UK. They literally have effectively their equivalent of Sainsbury's and Tesco's kind of fighting it out. But as a consequence, these companies make very good margins. They're very strong tenants. And that business is has performed really well for us. The reason I mention a few names that your listeners won't have heard of is to really highlight one of the great attractions of TR Property, which is that we're able to invest in a lot of small and mid-cap stocks. And these companies really either grow and are successful in the listed space, or we find that they ultimately, because more real estate is owned privately than publicly, that then we see M&A activity, and particularly if the stock market undervalues these names, then private equity will come along and grab them and take them private. And you know, over the years, we've had many successes in the trust. Hispania, which was a Spanish hotel business 3 years ago, Terris, which is prime offices in Paris, Green REIT, which some of your listeners will be familiar with, which was Dublin offices. And the common feature with these companies is they have very high management ownership. So as a shareholder, you feel very aligned with the management team. They're gonna do the right thing. And then obviously in the news last week, sadly, we didn't own the stock, but it was St. Modwen Property, where Blackstone have acquired it. And that's a classic case of a very large land bank, which the stock market struggled to value because it's going to take many years for that land bank to be sort of monetized. But for private equity, they've got more time and they can extract value in different ways. So I think for us at the moment, that's why we feel, you know, our two drivers of the market is that there's a lot of capital out there. Debt markets are well and truly open. We're seeing record in terms of the price of coupon of debt for our big listed companies. They're able to access debt markets. Lots of capital out there seeking to buy hard assets. If you're worried about inflation or you're worried about long duration bonds suffering, you know, real estate is a good place to get your income. And asset values are rising, so we feel really quite confident about the market.
So it's very clear, Marcus, from what you're saying, what your outlook is from here, and indeed how are you positioned? We've just been through obviously quite an extraordinary 12 to 18 months, and that very difficult environment globally. Did 2020 give you the opportunity to perhaps add new names to your portfolio, and how have you found that the trust has been coping?
Yeah, it's a great question, Richard. Our financial year runs March to March, so 31st of March. So really, the year that we'll be putting out our full year results tomorrow, and none of this is a secret because we publish an asset value every day. But you know, the numbers for March 20 to March 21, because of course you were starting at the low point, we're very positive. We had a total shareholder return of 28%. The benchmark did 15, 16. We did 21. So, you know, again, beating the benchmark, very, very important. So but what we saw during that period was the first half of it, where you really need to be very, very defensively based, but you could still get a lot of income that was really quite COVID secure. We talk about self-storage, supermarkets, healthcare, and residential. What you needed to be very underweight was retail and consumer-facing hotels, food and beverage, et cetera, et cetera. Post the vaccine announcement, of course, the tables all turned and you needed to say, what were we doing was very responding very much to that changing environment and refitting the portfolio, as it were, in the last few months, which has involved us increasing exposure, not so much to UK retail, where we see still very considerable headwinds, but more to continental retail, where rents were already much more affordable pre-pandemic. There wasn't the level of over-renting, and there wasn't the level of CVAs, i.e., administrations, etc. So we're confident of earnings returning in European shopping centres faster than the UK. That's been the first major place. The second is we have returned to London retail a little bit, where it got very bombed out. We did participate in Shaftesbury's deeply discounted capital raise at £4. Share price is now £6. So they had to raise money right at the bottom. So there are some examples like that. On hotels, we've been a little more reticent. If we could find hotels that are exposed only to leisure, absolutely, that's going to recover super quick. We're all desperate for a holiday. And if you try and book a cottage in Cornwall for half term, well, A, you can't, and B, it's eye-watering what people are charging. But business hotels, and particularly airports, we think that's going to take a long time to recover. So we haven't really gone back into that. And then office markets, we think that if you are developing high quality buildings, and we are invested in a little company in Spain, which invests only in Madrid, called Arima, which is a management team who'd sold their previous business, very, very high quality operators. And they're refurbishing and redeveloping half a dozen buildings in Madrid. And I'm really confident that they will let those well in the coming months.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. So many thanks again for your time, Marcus, and for those very valuable insights. And thank you for listening. Please feel free to like and subscribe. And of course, you can find much more by the way of investment insight and ideas at ii.co.uk. I'll be back next Tuesday with another Richard Hunter interview. Bye for now.